Isn't Job a cheery way to start the day? I shall never see happiness again. I have forgotten what hope is. Just a great way to start a morning, you know? Just a real encouragement there. Job may not be the greatest one to start with if we're trying to get a good start to the day. On the other hand, if we actually see Job in the fullness of the book, all the way from start to finish, we actually could. Because it is remarkable in so many ways. I like to read Job and remind myself that it really could be worse. You know, I mean, there's that moment where we have that consideration. I never underestimate that Job, by the time he's a third of the way into the book, has lost all of his family. They've all been killed off except for his wife. He's lost his entire wealth. They've all been stolen, taken from him, or destroyed. He has lost any possession he has. And then his health is taken away from him. He is afflicted with boils and leprosy and all kinds of tragedy. His wife, apparently she does not die because she has one line. She steps in long enough to say, curse God, and then die, and then she disappears as quickly as everyone else. And in some ways I'm not really sure if Job was happy that his wife is still with him in that sense. And just it's one tragic, crushing moment after another. The third of the book is dedicated to three friends of his come to him and say, obviously you did something wrong to offend God, you made God mad, and he's punishing you now, and you need to admit that you did something wrong, that you angered God in some way, and that way you can move forward, you can admit that you did it wrong, then you can do recompense for it, and we can move on with our lives. In the third of the book, one friend after another, they craft this story of how Job could possibly be the offending person who did this wrongdoing and now has to apologize for it in that particular way. Job patiently listens to each of them and says, but I didn't do those things. So the fact of the matter is that Job actually is one of the great reminders to us that our lives are not a one-to-one relationship of, I did some one thing wrong, now God is trying to punish me for it. We don't have to live in a constant fear that we're living in some kind of precise and exact justice system where for every single wrongdoing, every infraction that we commit, God is waiting to strike us with another affliction or another suffering. Just as soon as we step out of lines, he's going to strike us in this way. At a certain point, we go to appreciate that. We go, well, I know that. But we forget it. We forget it very quickly, and I know we forget it very quickly because time and again we ask the question out loud, we say, why are all these bad things happening to me? I'm a good person. That's exactly what we just did. The very thing that we did was we said, obviously I'm being punished by God, so I must have done something wrong, but I'm a good person, so now I can't figure out the thing I did wrong that God would cause me to be punished. That's not how it works. This isn't a one-on-one relationship that tries to strike us down in all of our suffering. In fact, quite the opposite. Our suffering happens. Gets to be independent from God trying to pull little strings through all of this. I think one of the most important things that happens in Job, which should just come back over and over for us, is the fact that Job, from the beginning of the book to the end, God is always with him. From the very beginning, God says, see my servant Job, with whom I am pleased. Despite the fact that Job suddenly receives affliction one after another, it is reminded again and again that God says, see my servant Job, with whom I am pleased. God is so invested in Job's life that he is interested in each and every development, and he's there and present in each and every one of these. It is truly remarkable to consider that for a moment, God actually isn't denying Job something, but challenging him. Consider for a moment our sufferings, the difficulties and hardships that we encounter in our lives, whatever they may be, they are vast and various wherever they may come from. I mean, when I was 6, 7 years old, I almost drowned in my neighbor's pool. I would have drowned in my neighbor's pool if my neighbor hadn't fished me out, which I suppose is why they were paying attention, because there was a pool, which is not nearly as terrifying as the sensation of drowning when you're not in a pool. When I was in Mexico studying Spanish one summer, I couldn't breathe and I felt like I was drowning, much like being in a pool, except there was no water for me to climb out of. I blacked out. I thought, that was it. Life is over. I woke up in a hospital in Mexico. Then I knew life was over. There have been any number of afflictions and sufferings. I have been lost and alone in the city of Rome. I've told you the story. I've been through all kinds of bizarre and strange moments. I've had pain so great that I wanted to die and just thought that that would be easier at that point. And just encountering all these sufferings and all this pain and all this affliction. And yet, I could become bitter for it. I could think that somehow I'm smited by God or unfavored or unloved or unhappy in so many of these ways. But we have to actually truly consider for a moment that our sufferings are not in fact moments where God is trying to afflict us. They're not really moments where God is trying to punish us and torture us and drive us crazy and drag us down. But consider for a moment if our sufferings were not in fact something that we should fear, but opportunities that we could be loved. Remember that with each and every moment of Job's life where he is separated further and further, and though he has these dark moments where he feels genuinely separated from anything that God could offer, God loves him even more. Each and every one of them becomes an opportunity for him to turn back to God in love, not because he did something wrong. That in our suffering, that in our affliction, what we have are moments to take that suffering and offer it back to God as a willing sacrifice, a ready and welcome sacrifice so that God can make something greater come out of it. It is a fascinating world that we live in, that we become so unwilling and so afraid of the idea of suffering that we want to end the suffering of others. We don't even want them to have to encounter it at all. And genuinely, I understand that there is a good desire in wanting to take away the suffering of others. But we should never underestimate the fact that suffering can be of gain. That we can turn that sacrifice back to God and offer it as something that makes for more grace. That grace can build upon that grace if we but are willing to offer that sacrifice. And it's not new. Think about all the parents who make sacrifices for their children so that their children might have something greater. Think of all the times you make a sacrifice so that you might become better at something. Whether we sacrifice a little sleep so that we can advance our studies, or we sacrifice some pain so we can grow better in a sport. It's fascinating, but we live in a society that's so bent on not having to suffer at all. Except, of course, if you ask any sports coach, they're ready to let their kids suffer. Why? Because it makes them better. Because our suffering can be of gain. Because our suffering does grow into something if we let it. We can let our suffering hold us. We can let our suffering control us and make us live in a frustrated fear that we doubt that God is even there anymore. We can be convinced that we'll never see happiness again, that our life like the wind is over and that there is no more hope. Or we can take that suffering and we could turn it back and say, you know what, God? I know I'm hurting right now, but I offer this sacrifice to you so that you might make something greater. Make a particular intention of it for the conversion of the stubborn of heart, for the softening of those who are hurting, for strength for the weak, for resolve for the failing, for guidance, for peace, for patience, for strength. We must never be afraid of the suffering because it is genuinely a part of our life. But it never has to control us. Sometimes in that suffering, God allows greater moments of miracle to occur than we would ever be able to understand without it. And think about it for a moment. If we never suffered, if we never struggled, if we never encountered hardship, if we never had any disease or failing, why would we even care if God existed? We would be convinced we could do everything on our own. Not to say that God's some kind of bizarre masochist who wants to hurt us. But genuinely, in this gift, we embrace the reality that we can remember that we have a God who loves us, who watches over each and every one of our struggles and sufferings and is present with us. God never said we would get through this life without pain. He promised we'd never have to do it alone. If we find ourselves hurting, find ourselves suffering, if we find ourselves separated or in pain, turn back to God Give him a chance to build something of our suffering, to make it a remarkable moment of grace, so that not only we, but those that we offer our suffering for, might have a greater knowing and loving appreciation of the God who cares for us.